wonder if you would comment on who I think are the real superpowers in the world, the super players, and that would be the International Monetary Fund and the World Trade Organization. I'm not sure that there will be any kind of economic security in Africa as long as trade barriers are being established by an unelected, unaccountable group.
Yes, you're right that the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank are massive players, and of course the whole global international domain is throwing all that into flux. However, I would contend that the sovereign states still have enormous amount of power, although the concept of the nation state is going to slowly attrit. The concept of sovereignty will not be an absolute anymore. Just look at responsibility to protect, look at NAFTA and things like that. But in this phase that we are in, I still think that the concept of international development by the consortium of developed nations as an entity can still break the back of the poverty and the pandemics that exist in the developing world. I still think that the political strength is there to do that. I honestly don't know how to predict any more than that. What I only fear is that the economics of the world seems to have a lot more guts and risk-taking strength than the political side, and that political will often lacks the depth of conviction of what should be done and fluctuates too much by the near-term, immediate headline type of concept. And so, as the last election has proven, we are near-term tactical fiddlers in the weeds, and there hasn't been a strategic thought. I think it's just scandalous the way they use the term strategy. Strategy is the realm of the generals for us in the old Greek way. But strategy is the realm of leaders and not managers.
Is it still there?
Yes.
Hi there, sir. My name is Andrew Farrow. I'm from the University of Lethbridge, and my question for you would be, what do you believe is the most important reform to be done in the UN in order to make it a more effective body for dealing with stuff such as Rwanda?
Well, in fact, a lot of the peacekeeping reforms have been done. The responsibility to protect is now the doctrine, so it's an instrument to hold the Security Council accountable more than the charter and doing something. There's a whole set of criteria to do that. I will say that fiddling with the Security Council and trying to get rid of the veto power is a waste of time. Those five big powers still exist. They created the UN and the veto so that they wouldn't go to war with each other, and that scenario has not yet, you know, changed enough to fiddle with that. The other side, I think, which is essential, is that the developed world has got to be prepared to pay the price of peace. Up until the end of the Cold War, there were only about 13, 14 countries that did peacekeeping. It was a rich man's business. You had to bring your own equipment, you had to be able to sustain yourself, and poor countries did not have the assets to do that. And so it was very much developed countries, Canada, Ireland, Scandinavians, Italy, the British, and so on. And that was the bulk of the peacekeeping. However, since the end of the Cold War, we've done a bit like the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, at first, all its sons, and they had large families, would go off to war to defend the empire and increase it and hold it. As jobs got a little better in Rome and the families got smaller, the son was too important to send off to war, so we hired somebody else to do it. And so what has happened with world peace and stability is that we've hired developing countries' armies to do it. And so the Bangladeshis and a number of other developing countries who don't have the skills, the equipment, or the training to do the job are doing complex peacekeeping missions, and too often than not, they're failing. That, I think, is one of the major problems. And so that's why right now with Darfur, Canada reinforcing the African Union troops and committing themselves, I hope, far more to building up that capacity in Africa as the first respondents, and then with the UN to come in, is important. And so that means that the developed countries may have to pay in blood, sweat, and tears to keep peace in the world, and in so doing, be able to build the capacity in those countries to self-sustain themselves.
Thank you.
Okay. One more?
Two more? Two more.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you. I'm Christopher Smith, a social worker, and had some minor work with international social services, but primarily one of the questions I was very interested in was, you mentioned conflict resolution, and we've had some reference here to language, and then of course the meta process of language, the language within language, some of the confusion about terminology, the definitional disarray, the young people, and analysis of paralysis not moving. I was just curious, with the work or research that is being done in that realm of conflict resolution, what types of efforts we might apply to the war of words. I look at things from a philosophical construct and sometimes wonder, even with the youth, you know, whether, you know, we really know whether we're coming at things as just another, economic machine, or whether, you know, we can return to or maintain the acknowledgement of a living organism, a spiritual organism, as if it were, you know, that looks out for our people who are, you know, we are connected. We are, as you said, only 12-hour flights away, and, you know, things affect each other. It's the language that I was really interested in, what type of work is, you know, what we acknowledge. Sometimes your own opening comments, you know, you've got a mandate, but the mandate was confusing. What was it you were being told? Yeah. So what are we doing to work on clarifying our own words?
Yeah, in fact, there's not enough study being done on what should be the new language of diplomacy in this complex and ambiguous era. And there is, some of us are doing some of that work. But it is rather interesting, however, languages and how that can create barriers, because the language has its culture, and
very short.
When I was writing my book, I decided to write it in English. However, so often I would have a French word or verb that was more effective in the phrase than the English one that I ultimately used. When I translated the book, I had the reverse scenario, and so you sort of wonder that if the grand leaderships of the world were multilingual, there are words in some languages that come from some cultures that explain things that other languages don't even have the concept of to bring solutions and so on. And so I see far more an ability of integrating the languages and evolving it in all its fashions, but closer to the cultures and not destroying the cultures behind them. Of course, it's interesting, when I got the Governor General's Award for my book, I wrote it in English, and the chap who won the same award but in French, in his speech at the end, said that he thanked me for having written my book in English.
This will be the last question.
Howard Forsyth, I like your 3 D's.
Yes, sir.
And there's an opening in the Caribbean and Latin America. The U.S. has bumbled Monroe Doctrine for 150 years. Mm. Bush was thrown out of Latin America. There's room for development and diplomacy there, for Canada to sneak in the back door. We should go in with women. Women are nurturers. Men are predators. Half of all our leadership worldwide should be women. How can we do these things the way you would see it?
And at the end of this, I expect a doctoral presentation from the University of Lethbridge. And first of all, if I may, we snuck into the Organization of American States. Joe Clark, all of a sudden, one day it appeared. And we became a member of the Organization of American States. However, it's rather interesting that we do so little north-south, and yet so many South American countries who are getting rid of the whole concept of dictatorship and so on have been coming to the Canadian military and so on. We've been heavily involved in the South. But that hasn't been an impetus for us to learn Spanish, yet it should. And I think it's absolutely essential that the Americas have a north-south communications, because there are a few places down there that are going to turn into some basket cases. And how are we actually looking at that? Haiti is being abandoned in its flight, and we've not brought good solutions there. We're not culturally aware enough of how we can assist, and we can be such an incredible counterpoint to the Americans in regards to assisting many of those countries. So you're absolutely right there. Secondly, that in many of the countries where conflicts exist, one of the questions that I'm often asked is, what about reconciliation? I mean, how do these people live with each other afterwards? And after looking at it and having been involved in a number of countries, particularly Africa, over the last while, I've come to a personal conclusion. It's not unique, I don't think, but it's that reconciliation in those countries, which are so culturally male-dominated, will only happen, in my opinion, by empowerment of women and education of the children. And I'll end with the following. In the Canadian Senate, there is over 40% of women, and they are the driving thrusts in that Senate. And that Senate gives a whole different perspective to what these bills that are being punched through this politically combative scenario that you find in the House of Commons, and how many times we've sent the bills back to get them cleaned up and restructured to meet what the government or the people expect. And the only way we're able to do that is because in the Senate we are not at each other's throats because of our political colors. Thank you very much.
Bob, one of the recommendations of General Dallaire is to join a non-governmental organization. You have in front of you a little red sheet. Would you complete it and fill it out, and someone will take it at the door or put it on the table outside, and then we'll be able to follow through with emails and involve you one way or another. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gordon. Gordon was a Fuller brush salesman in a past life, so he's very good at this. Thank you very much, General Dallaire. That was wonderful, and we've just been so honored to have you here this afternoon, and I think all of us have had a good experience here, and it has made us think, and I'm sure it will continue, and you will have provoked some discussion and thought that will be ongoing, and we certainly appreciate that very much. So again, thank you very much.